We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good afternoon and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein. Ladies and gentlemen, as we move into the election cycle of 2020, the Democrat progressive opposition to Donald Trump will no doubt intensify like we've never seen before. We've already witnessed the Kavanaugh hearings and the two-year Mueller probe. The Supreme Court justice withstood as intense a character assassination as I've ever seen in my political life. The Mueller probe was probably the single greatest hoax perpetrated on the American people in modern political history, yet no one to date has been held accountable. It would be beyond naive to think that the assault on the president and our constitutional republic will be anything resembling a truthful endeavor. To help us understand this better, I've invited back Zach Myman to examine the three R's, and I'm not talking about reading, writing, and arithmetic, although Zach is a PhD in mathematics, but to examine racism, redistribution, and Russian Marxism, and how he applies his M theory and the Little Red Riding Hood tests where applicable to these divisive subjects. Zach Myman emigrated from Russia in 1980. He is an author, has a PhD in mathematics from MIT. He's a master chess player, father, grandfather, and he's also become a friend as well. So welcome back, Zach. I'm really glad that you're here with us again.
Hi, Ray. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Zach. You know, Zach, you certainly know the expression, the truth will set you free. While you also have a deep understanding of what government's perspective is, that their truth can enslave us. You know, it appears today that we've nearly lost the art of civil discussion, that language has become a cheap shot attack, and that there appears to be no escape from it. Why has language become such a problem?
I think language is the first line of attack and the first line of defense should be. Marxism started attack on language, first of all. And for example, I don't like the word capitalism that he invented. It's free markets. For the first time in history, we had free markets instead of slavery and agricultural society where people couldn't choose who would be the boss and who would be employee. And the capitalism, like Marx said, it was free market. You make contract, you want to work for me, free. You agree and we work. But instead of free markets, we are using Marx's word, capitalism, and it immediately pushes conversation into a different direction. Now we have to start who has capital, who doesn't have capital, as if it is important. So the language fight is important, but freedom of speech is not just about language. It's about what you're... Somebody would have to control what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say.
You know, distortion and suppression of free speech is kind of gone rampant against conservatives lately, but we're hearing a lot of words that are continuously in the political realm right now, and it's almost a political tactic to denigrate Donald Trump, such as the term racist, race, racism, and I'll throw in a fourth, white supremacist, or even a fifth, his mental instability. But I want to start with race. What is race, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it's just, first of all, it's a virus, in a sense. Because it's not for people who are fighting for redistribution, who are fighting for power, it doesn't matter what cause to figure out. You're right. They can. They throw at Trump different accusations: racist, mentally unstable, liar. It doesn't matter what sticks or doesn't stick. They just use racism as a way to manipulate people, to get them emotionally, to bring them on their side. They don't care about racism, especially the Democrat Party. They had, KKK was mainly based on Democrats, and they were against civil rights. They have very bad history on racism, but they use it. And why am I calling it virus? Because virus attacks sick organism, and virus doesn't matter what sickness is, but just to get into it. So, for example, the same way with redistribution, example of what I studied in Marxism, Leninism, they said people, and we studied that, people not necessarily open right now for revolutions. So we have to, at that time, it was very popular, we have to get involved in African national movements. Mm-hmm. And then gradually we'll steer it into a communist revolution. The same way with racism or anything else. They want to bring, to make country to socialism, to communism, so they start on what is, how people are, get immediately emotionally involved. And that has been used in American history, by the way. America is very vulnerable in terms of racism because it is based, that's probably the only country in the world that has so many different nationalities, races. And they're trying to live together, and people who start fire should push one nation, one nationality, one race against other. And then when fire starts, then they can use one group against other and use it to gain the power.
In a scientific sense, are there really different races? I mean, genetically, we're Homo sapiens, right? We're all primates.
Right.
I mean, so we're talking about an original definition. I mean, the sociologists say that in America there are like five races: white, black, Native American, Asian, and Hispanic.
Right.
Are these separate races, or is it an illusion?
I see nothing wrong, even if it is separate races, even okay. There are subgroups. I see nothing wrong because I belong to many different groups, depending on my age, on my gender, on how much I weigh, and so on. There are different characteristics that come into every person, and he can be organized along each characteristic. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. My main principle, maybe main principle of many people, and you either accept this principle and then there is no racism, or you don't accept this principle. And the same principle applied to racism and redistribution. I think deeply believe, it's my core belief, that all people are equal.
Okay.
That each person, not just equal, but all people are super important. Each person is a world in itself because they have souls. It's not like an ant or something. So maybe it can be argued, maybe it's not, all people equal. But if you accept this, then it doesn't matter what race each person belongs. If you accept this, then you cannot take some stuff from one person and give it to another forcefully. And that's the same thing.
It's very true. I mean, it appears that very often our government, they don't look at us as people. They look at us as groups, and you're right, they pit one against the other, but each of us is really equal. I don't see any difference in color or gender. I look at the person as a whole, and that is lost, it appears, today. You know, I mean, they're comparing Trump to Hitler, Stalin, Mao, that he'll murder millions. Is this free speech? What is this? Is this just manipulation? I mean, but this gets into people's heads and creates these separations.
And also, if you accept that all people are equal, then you can freely talk about different characteristics of different groups of different people. You can talk about different races. There is nothing wrong about it. Even though it is politically incorrect, and I think that half of the audience already labeled me as racist, and probably you as well, just for saying this out loud, that you can talk about differences, because we are not allowed. I think America lost its freedom of speech with the concept of minorities, that you are not allowed to criticize certain group. It's even criminal to criticize certain group of people. And then it gradually progressed. You are not allowed to criticize members of certain group. Look at Trump when he was saying some bad thing about some person and the person happened to be wrong color, then he is racist. And there is ban on some topics. You are not allowed to talk about differences or, you know, conditions of certain groups. There is ban on some questions. You are not allowed to ask questions even. And you're not allowed to think certain way. And that's why the main reason why I started developing this M theory, because it is banned on thought. It's not just you cannot speak freely, you cannot think freely.
Give us a little primer again for those that missed our last interview on what is M theory and the Little Red Riding Hood test.
Yeah, the Little Red Riding Hood test, it's part of M theory. It's maybe, it's very important part, but it's part. M theory is a way how to think freely. And it's actually a formalization how normal free people think. I'll explain what is the reason why it was created, but to give you an analogy, M theory is like a German U-boat, submarine. At some point, Brits dominated the sea, and it was very important because all goods traveled on the sea, all trade was done by the sea. Mm-hmm. And it was the reason for the British Empire, because they dominated the sea. And then, Germany was a weak, insignificant country after World War I, and with inflation and financial problems there. And then they challenged England, and the way they challenged, they developed a submarine. Okay. And to build a boat, you have to use a lot of resources, skills, money. And to build submarine, it's not that expensive. It doesn't bring the products one way across the world. But what it can do, it can kill the boat. And that's how they ended the domination of the British Empire. And that's what brought Germany to dominate the world in a sense. And I compare M theory with this submarine, U-boat, okay, they call. Why? Because I tried, tens of billions are spent to control Americans by fake news, fake media, fake celebrity, and especially fake science. Financed by taxpayer money and billionaires, non-profit companies, some of the billionaire names financing fake sciences, I documented in my book, Is Trump a Liar?
Okay.
How can I confront that? That's when I started writing the book. So that's why there are hundreds of fake scientific papers written by thousands of fake scientists. For example, they write that Trump is mentally ill, and 10,000 medical psychologists, scientists signed this statement. So I tried to fight it on their territory. My son, Philip, and I, you remember Puerto Rico disaster?
Yes.
My son, there was six people that died during this Hurricane Maria. And suddenly we saw in papers, in scientific papers, that there were 3,000 people died. And poor Trump had some interview. He said, where did 3,000 people come from? It was 6 people who really died from this disaster. And he was accused, of course, he's racist, he's liar. And it's one of his biggest lies and documented. You can check in New York Times and Washington Post. It's a big lie. And we looked, my son Philip and I looked at the main paper that where these 6,000 people looks like a lot during Hurricane. And there was a mistake in this paper. They assumed that the mortality rate of those who left the island and those who stayed on the island was assumed to be the same, and that assumption was not warranted or supported. Mm-hmm. And using some manipulations of regressions and stuff, they said that that could have been, and that's practically proves that it wasn't 6, but because some people eventually died, their death could be attributed to Maria, or some people didn't return to the island, and so on. So mm-hmm. we published our response, not in journal, but on SSRN, people can check it. And we wrote the authors of the report, and the authors couldn't reconcile the flaw. So still, we didn't make a splash, Philip and I. So still, you can see even nowadays that, and it's a lot of money. It's hundreds of billions of dollars were allocated to Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They created programs, special programs, where doctors would be trained to say that this death resulted actually from Hurricane Maria, when a person died from heart attack or something, because his conditions worsened or he didn't have medical treatment in time or something. Anyway, it was a reason to tie it up to Hurricane Maria because they received the money. And of course, money were misplaced. And recently, FBI arrested several politicians in Puerto Rico. And one could have predicted that. So it's a lot of money. It's hundreds of billions of dollars are spent on this fake science. So there is no way for us, if we want to argue against it, to fight with these British boats. So M-theory is a way to attack, to make a case without actually going through the heart, to the heart of the problem, without actually going into all details. I can give you a quick example. Trump's interview on where he was asked a question about Iran.
Okay.
And he used M-theory in his response. One would think that he can, you know, he could have said, let's go through this agreement with Iran. This was, this particular testing was not good, and this point, paragraph 2.6 was not right. Instead of this, he said, that's what he said. He went into M meta spaces, I call it. He jumped into the space, and from the space, he looked at this problem. That's meta space. He said, anyway, this agreement is for a very short period of time, for a few years. You don't make agreements like this with countries. So what do we do after it ends? So if anything else, he said, forget about this agreement is good or bad. It's a very short period of time. We have to do something so that Iran will not get nuclear weapons.
And it really cuts to the chase, doesn't it?
Exactly. And that makes sense. And it's meta space. It's meta argument. It's not going down into being wrapped into small details. Because once he mentioned some details, some paragraph 3.6, there will be 100 scientists and politicians and fake news people who would come out and say Trump lied because he didn't mention that there was comma in second sentence. Or there was another 10 paragraphs in such and such, you know, and they will produce such a lot of smoke that there is no way to find the truth. I think Octopus is fighting like this. He produces smoke, and then nobody see where this octopus was, water was, something like this. And that's what they do with this hundreds of billions of dollars. So that's the idea of M-theory, just to give people tool to formalize how to fight back all this fake news and fake science.
The Out Loud Truth will continue in a moment.
Patriots. Through his widely acclaimed poetry books, The Trump Chronicle, Ray Ray has preserved for us these historic events that have surrounded the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. His fervent and patriotic poems capture in real time what could have easily been lost or forgotten. The Trump Chronicle is available on Amazon or through the America Out Loud bookstore. Pick up a few of these memorable books for your library. They are a must-have for our MAGA movement. Let's support this important patriotic poet and show host so we can continue to read history through poetry.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Zach, I want to change gears and talk about the Jeffrey Epstein case. Now, they say officially that he committed suicide. Please apply meta theory and your testing to tell us what really happened. What's the truth here?
Okay, it's, by the way, meta theory has some technical terms like finger statement, you know about this, that something that is impossible clearly to prove right or wrong, whether it happened or not. And whether he committed suicide or not, it's a typical finger statement. If we knew, without doubt, there wouldn't be a question.
Okay.
So how to apply M-theory to this? I want to discuss some personal setting, my approach to all of this, some my personal experience before I take maybe a minute before
sure.
I go to this. I am very pain intolerant. Personally, I went recently a few days ago to eye doctor, and half of procedures they didn't do to me because I just couldn't stand it. You know, there is air in my eyes or pressure or something. And that's one thing. Another, and maybe it's, I don't know about you, but I think women are more intolerable than men. But maybe it's a statement that is not, I'm not allowed to say. Even though recently I started doubting this because my wife told me that she's afraid of torture. And I said, why afraid of torture? Because it will be painful before for you to not to tell whatever. She's afraid that some terrorist would come and torture her. Because it will be painful for you, and because you'll try not to tell what they want to know. No. It's not. I'm not afraid of this. I will tell them immediately whatever they want to know. I'm afraid that they will not believe me.
Oh, that's funny.
So maybe women also not as tolerant as I thought because of that. But anyway, I am very pain intolerant. And another thing, I am coming to an age. You know, some people even though I feel like I'm 13 years old, some people might think that I'm old man. And I began to think in conversation with some of my friends about what happened, you know, at the end. And one of the fears of many old people is not to die, but to get sick, not to be able to maintain themselves without help. And when this happened, you know, people would want to maybe finish it all, and we have laws against this and stuff like that. And I had discussions with some of my friends about this, and there are certain ways, and you don't want it to be painful. Even if you want to end your, suppose you are in desperate situation and everything is painful, you want to end it all, it's not, you know, how do you do it? If you shoot, you can miss and stuff like that. So it's an interesting intellectual question from this point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming back to Jeffrey Epstein, suppose what's the null hypothesis here? Suppose he did want to commit suicide, okay? Let's assume that he wanted to commit suicide. Would he do it by hanging? Think about it. That's very painful. And if I am pain tolerant, he, knowing his style of life, he probably also pain intolerant. Mm-hmm. It's very dangerous because it's possible that he would stop oxygen access to his mind and he will come vegetable at all and stuff like that. It's possible that he will not finish the job and will be wounded for the rest of his life, unable.
That's true.
And it's possible also, so it's possible, I'm not talking about pain, that he's crushing his bones while doing this and not calling for help because his bones were crushed. So it doesn't make sense. Even if he wanted to commit suicide, with his money, maybe for other poor soul that doesn't have anything else, oh, there are shits, I'll hang myself if I want to commit suicide. But with his money, he certainly would have thought of something easier. And there wouldn't be any obstacle in the world to bring into this, his jail some pill or something. He was meeting with his lawyers 24/7, I think.
So it could have been a poison pill or, you know, a chemical or something.
Yeah, but something that would be for sure that would be painless and wouldn't be it's terrible and it's painful as the suicide by hanging. So I personally, I don't believe that he hanged himself. I don't believe that this is suicide. I believe it is a murder. What I presented you the argument and theory, and by the way, any theory and any law court and any proceedings and any trial never prove anything consistently, never. Look at OJ when they had this old trial, and we still, there wasn't, they accepted the truth, so to speak.
Yes.
He didn't kill his wife. So we never know for sure, but this is the way you construct rejection region. And if you observe your event in this region, then you reject null hypothesis. I personally feel confident rejecting this null hypothesis. And the fact that there are some other details that contradict suicide just adds on this. For example, I just read recently that his video camera malfunctioned.
Right.
And stuff like that. But this is the main thing. He's not an idiot. He's criminal. Looks like he's criminal. He wasn't proven in court. Well, he was, by the way, a few years before. But he is criminal, fine. But he's not an idiot. He's a smart man. He's a rich man.
Well, it just didn't seem to add up. No video cameras, the suicide watch, the no suicide watch. You know, there was no overhead way that he could hang something from the ceiling. You know, they described it as he had to hang from the bed to the floor. I mean, we just picture ourselves that there wouldn't even be enough force to create an injury from 2 feet. You know, you have your whole body in the way. It just didn't make sense, I think, to a lot of people. That's what I think.
Yeah. What you just mentioned is what technically I called in M-theory red flags.
Right.
I can tell you. And if there are a lot of red flags...
What about A.G. Barr? You've mentioned in your book that you felt he was the grand master of M-theory. You know, relating that to a chess grandmaster. What? Why? What makes him a grandmaster of metaspace?
Well, he made great argument when at the end, in assessing the president's actions, he said that he proved Trump's innocence because he was Mueller refused to condemn or to say that Trump is guilty or not guilty. And William Barr, in fact, used M-theory and the Little Red Riding Hood test.
Okay.
He started with implicit assumption that the null hypothesis is Trump obstructed justice. He doesn't have to convince those who believe that Trump didn't obstruct justice. He's talking to people who don't believe that. So his logic is this. Okay, let's assume that Trump obstructed justice, and let's look at some of the facts to see if they're consistent with that assumption.
Right.
And then he moves on to describe some of the facts. And the main fact, he says that, did Trump provide total access to his campaign and White House documents? Did he direct his senior aides to testify? Did he assert no privilege claims? And he answered yes to all. He let access completely all the documents, and he provided all the people. So that doesn't, it's, this is not the behavior of a guilty person.
Well, it's the same thing when they talk about, and I see that point very clearly, by the way. I really do, that the when you take the opposite assumption and then you show the reasons why it doesn't make sense, then it really doesn't make sense.
Right.
So I understand the logic of that. How can we apply that to Trump being called a racist? Is he any of that? And should we assume, okay, let's assume that Trump is a racist. What are the items that would be on the checklist to prove that he wasn't? I mean, I knew him when I lived in New York. He was lauded by the black community for his involvement. He's always done things that have been to unite people, but yet they want to say he's a racist. But what do we do?
I started writing a third book on M-Theory with the title, Is Trump Racist? And I even started GoFundMe on this because I want to make a movie before campaign 2020 on racism. And so I cannot answer all of your questions about this, but I give you one example.
Okay.
If he's a racist, say I'm a racist and Charles will happen, is it a racist behavior to say there are fine people on both sides? If, first of all, there were fine people on both sides, and it's funny because all evidence disappeared from internet about these people.
Mm-hmm.
I recently tried to check for the book. I saw it with my own eyes. People interviewed after the event, and they were normal people. They came there to protect this General Lee statue. And they were talking about what happened. And now I cannot find any video, any interview, any text, nothing on the internet. But I know they were fine people. But it doesn't really matter. If he's a racist, and, you know, well-hidden racist, why would he say there were fine people on both sides? What he's not helping himself. He making himself just target of an attack, visible that people would call him racist for this. It doesn't make sense. If he, if I were in his place and I'm racist, I would never acknowledge that I'm racist. I would do some policies that would hurt some racists, some minorities. He is in charge. He's the top guy in the United States. He's the president.
Yeah.
He can make executive decisions left and right. Why would he acknowledge that he is racist if that's what he did?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
right.
One way to approach, go to Metaspace and look at the whole picture, so to speak.
You know, I just want to go back to some political correctness. And I wrote a poem 15 months ago that I'd like to read. It's called The PC Virus. I've never understood politically correct. I always thought communication would be something more direct. When you tippy-toe around it, you hide the real effect. Shielding what you really mean will make it circumspect. It's gotten to the point because it's harder to detect. It's time we should reveal the truth, which talking heads protect. So instead of talking straight, it's vagueness they elect. God forbid you tell someone their nonsense you reject. Offending is off limits, so feelings don't reflect. They anesthetize the issues to truth that you inject. So lost in their delusion, so worried about their tact. Well, I prefer the bloody truth than lie to interact. When deception is your strategy, of this I can be sure, the virus that's infected you may never have a cure.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Zach, just about every top Democrat candidate for president, I'm talking Harris, Sanders, Warren, and Biden, are described as having a socialist agenda, which, as I understand it, is basically a government takeover of the means of production. There's no property, no free enterprise, a very high income taxation to pay for it. In other words, they take from us and allocate as they choose. Of course, if we refuse, the IRS puts a proverbial gun to our head. What is meant by the term redistribution?
It's mainly it is used as forceful redistribution, because charity, nobody can have problem with that. If you voluntarily want to give your money to somebody else,
yes,
I think it's nice gesture. But if person A comes to person B, takes money from person B under threat of violence, and gives it to person C, I don't think we should applaud to person A and to person C, by the way, mm-hmm. for receiving this. That's redistribution. It is the main example of, there are several examples of redistribution that are going on in the United States. Mainly, they're all financial at the end, but mainly it's income tax.
Yes.
Also, the printing of money, the monopoly on money, that's redistribution, of course. The debt that America takes on its children, it's redistribution. And all racial privileges, or not necessarily racial, all privileges of certain groups over other groups, they're also redistribution. And people who want redistribution, they want power, because those who are redistributing, they really can, something can stick to their hands.
Is redistribution theft?
Yes, how else it could be described? They say it's volunteer, for example, income tax. Try not to, and volunteer, you can always give your money to the government.
Right, why write a check?
Warren can send, Trump gives up his salary. Why not Elizabeth Warren gives her salary that she gets in Harvard for claiming that she is Indian? She can always do that. She doesn't have to increase tax. She increases tax not for her, but so that you and I would pay more to somebody else.
Would we be called racist for calling out redistribution as theft? That, yeah. You know, how do we fight this is really my question.
Yeah.
I mean, we really don't have much power. I mean, if you get a letter from the IRS, there's not much you can do. You can hide. They have your social security number. They know where you live. They know where you work. They know everything about you, every credit card you own, every asset you register. We're stuck. There's no way out.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, the only thing is, it's not a law. You cannot go on a demonstration against this. It's only if people opinions change. And I think that's the only way to fight it. And that's what you're doing with programs like this. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to do with the books that I write. that's the only, maybe one or two people change their opinion. That's, then we're closer to our goal.
You know, it's you talked about the last time we spoke about, you felt that you were actually like the movie Back to the Future, that you're coming back from our future. What did you mean by that? And are we really already there and not even realize it?
We are very close. I came from Russia. I was born in Russia, in Belarus, to be exact. But I lived in Moscow almost all my life before I came here. So I know that the entire society could be wrong. And it doesn't, Americans don't have this experience. They think that if TV and celebrities and scientists say something, then how could, 10,000 scientists said this, it must be right. To me, it's not even an argument. Even if a million scientists said something, especially if a million scientists said something, it could be wrong. So coming from Russia, I have this experience. And what is interesting about socialism, that even, that's really a paradox, what I'm going to say. Okay. Even if it worked, suppose there is a great country somewhere where socialism worked, still it would be morally wrong, because there were, like ancient Greece or ancient Rome, they were based on slavery. It worked for them. They were famous and rich countries, but it was wrong nevertheless. Now, with socialism, there is no country where it worked. Look at Argentina, look at Cuba, look at North Korea, look at Eastern Germany. And, you know, when two countries are separated into socialism and free market country, so we can see that the same people on either side of a border, but for one it works, for another it doesn't. So it's clear that it's even doesn't work. Still, people insist on bringing socialism to United States. And we are very close. We have this income taxes increasing, all this screaming about rich, about greed. I mean, recently, for example, that's a small thing, but it's a big signal for me. Recently, some medical companies were judged, they had to pay, I think, for some company who were producing painkillers, they had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars. Quite recently.
Fine.
And that's fine, but for me, what was shocking, that the prosecutor made the case that this company were motivated by greed. And that was convincing for juries to, that was one of the main reasons why jury convicted this company. What's wrong with motivated by greed? How else should they be motivated, the companies? What else should they be, what should be their goals? To pay taxes, like some people are saying? They have to, the only difference between free markets and socialism is that there is greed on one side. The problem with Russia is actually that there is no motivation. You invent something and you won't become rich. You won't make it. So what's the point? People come to America, they invent something like Brin, with Google. Then it works.
You needed to, when you were going for your higher education in Russia, you had to go to Marxism University.
Yes.
So you are an expert on Marxism. What is Marxism in a nutshell for our listeners?
Well, the idea of Marx, that he looks at history of civilization and he says that there are always two classes, one oppressing class, oppressors and people who are oppressed. And that all is defined by a relationship to production means production. Some people own production means and some people don't, and that's what why it's confrontational. And the only way to get out of it, and he I mean, it's fine when he's talking about slavery or when he's talking about agricultural states, when people would have, you know, right of first night or something. When they didn't enter into contract voluntarily, but under free market, under capitalism, people enter voluntarily. So there is, you don't like it, go work for something else. He just make pretending that all people are victim and they, if they don't have access to some mysterious capital, then they can do anything. They can't open a shop, or they can open a bakery or something, which is ridiculous, certainly not in modern age.
Why did you emigrate?
Well, part of it is racism, in a way, because I knew that my children, I'm Jewish, and I knew that my children wouldn't be allowed to Moscow University, any good university, because at that time there was government policy against Jews because of bad relationship with Israel. And that was the main reason. Here, at least, my old children got nice education. Oldest children went to PhDs and went to Harvard and stuff like that. But so the point, this is point of racism. I don't care if somebody makes racial statement. In a way, I would tell you, I encourage this. I tell you one personal story. I went to one company for an interview long time ago. And there were partners there sitting, and one of the partners asked me, "Are you a Jew?" And I hesitated, and the other partner immediately pushed him and said, "You're not allowed to ask this question."
Oh my. Come on, okay.
I said, "I am glad you're asking this question. I am a Jew. And, you know, if you are Nazis in here, I'd like to know it in advance. I don't want to have problems after I start the work here." And one of the best companies. I think it's the best company I ever worked for. Am I allowed to give the name?
Of course, go ahead.
It's Susquehanna, and the person who asked the question was Jeff Yass. It's the best company in the world, I believe. And I cherish every day that I worked in that company. And he, by the way, he asked me, do you want to know if I'm Jewish? I said, no.
Well, you know, in a way, it gets it out on the table up front. Right. There's no hidden agenda. You don't want to work for a company and then find out they're talking about you behind their backs and all of this and that's happening. So it's like what I'm talking about, said, being up front.
Exactly. And he said, "I am Jewish." I said, "I don't care." And best company, best boss I ever had. I mean, I don't have words to describe this company. My point is different, that it's okay if people make racial statements. I like that. When this AOL, you asked me during previous interview, when she was giving anti-Semitic statement, I like the fact that she said that, because at least I know who she is. There is maybe half of Congress, if not more, who are anti-Semitic, and I don't know, because they don't say this. So statements are okay if the government policy that I object.
Yes.
Doesn't become a murderer if he thinks that he wants to kill somebody. Person doesn't become a murderer even if he says he wants to kill somebody. You know,
it's only when they do. It's all words.
Yeah. Wife says to husband, "I want to kill you," and she's a big deal. But why then people become racist if they think, have racial thoughts or say racial statements? It means nothing. They identify some group and some, you know. I mean, it's upsetting and it's maybe immoral or wrong. I don't encourage this. But it's not criminal. Don't make it criminal. Especially if you have no problem with racial government policies, something that I have no... I cannot fight, I cannot change, I cannot avoid.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a few other things I want to ask you in the last few minutes together. One is about chess. Why are Russians, particularly Russian Jews, good at chess?
It's also personally, I can tell you. I was, and this is a question of race also, when I was bringing up, I knew that for Jews, it's harder to get to certain position, to be accepted to certain schools, to be accepted to certain companies, and to get into certain specialties. Like you cannot at that point, and even now, you cannot become politician and being a Jew. And the only thing that is that I knew nobody could prevent me if I play chess or in math, because math is, it's not like philosophy where you have to prove that you're better than the other person and there is no objective proof. In math, you are either good or you're bad, and that's it. It's clear for everybody. The same as in chess. Mm-hmm. And that's why talented Jewish people, they went to chess, because that would be, they couldn't be stopped if they're good. They would have top of them, like Botvinnik, Tal, Bronstein. They would have reasonably good life and be respected. And it's easy, and nobody can stop them in competing, though they tried. They tried to do it with Kasparov, who was forced to change his Jewish name, Weinstein, to Kasparov. They also tried it with Korchnoi, and you know, and there are several Jewish chess players, great chess players, that Americans never even heard of, and they were not allowed to participate in international tournaments.
I remember in 1972,
like
watching Horace Spassky, Bobby Fischer, the world was fixated on Iceland, and this battle. It was really a Cold War battle, really.
Yes.
And then I took up chess, and to tell you the truth, I wasn't very good at it, but I gave it a shot. But let me tell you, when someone would challenge me to a game, I felt terror, absolute terror. You really have to get over this fear, don't you, to compete like this?
You never get over it. I still every game I play, even on internet, I feel terror. It's that there is no way around it.
Oh my God! You also wanted to become a movie maker, and I watched a very short movie in preparing for this interview. It was called "You Kiss, You Marry," and it talked about love and chess in a short movie. What was the point of the movie?
The movie was created as my diploma project for New York. New York Film Academy. I graduated, and that was my final project. And I went to this New York Film Academy because I wanted to make movie Publicani.
Yes.
I wrote a couple of books talking. Again, about this question that you asked, what can we do about redistribution? I wrote a couple of fiction books illustrating that redistribution is bad. One is, what happens if we are able to redistribute mental energy? And that's called Publicani. And another, what happens if we are able to redistribute sexual energy? And that's called Do Not Give Your Strength to Women. It's adult book. And both of them are discussing this concept of forced redistribution, but on a different level, going, so to speak, in metaspace. It's Jewish science fiction in a way. And I wanted to make a movie about Publicani, and that's why I went to this New York Film Academy. I did some, we did some filming, but not, it didn't go. I wasn't able to.
Is the project dead?
Yeah, at this point.
Okay.
Because, like Marx would say, I didn't have access to capital.
I see. Wow. And then I know you have some, you're in the process of making other books. And I guess I just want to finish off this, the way we kind of finished off our last one. And that was, is there hope for America, or are we already somewhere we don't want to be, but we don't even realize it?
I don't know. I tell you, I don't think it is, but I will do whatever I can to so that America will still remain a free country, great country that I know, that I met, that I saw. And one of the things I can tell you, one of the things, I remember in Russia, that's this feeling that you are not allowed to say certain things because bad things could happen to you. Mm-hmm. And recently I started getting this feeling in the United States. I know that I will be labeled racist because of this interview, because of things that I said. You probably also will be labeled racist.
Yes.
And it's, in this country, it's becoming criminalized. It's not just an accusation. It's they want to start impeachment on Trump because he's racist. That's one of the arguments they use. So we are moving into very, very bad direction in this country. And people, General Flynn, your guy.
My guy, absolutely. Love General Flynn and love his family.
One technical term I introduce in the book that I'm writing is criminalization of sneezing. Even in Russia, I didn't see that. They would have to invent reason to have a pretext to arrest the guy. They would manipulate something, create some stuff. In terms of General Flynn, I mean, what the hell? They accuse him that he lied to Pence. Big deal, even if he did. It's not criminal. And the way they make criminalizing it, they say, oh, if Russians know about it, then they will use it as blackmail. It's so ridiculous. It's even disgusting, this line of logic.
Well, we're hoping to see some clarity coming from that in the next several weeks or months. It really has upset many, many millions of Americans regarding General Flynn. And, you know, espionage has been going on for decades. You know, everybody, you know, we're so naive about it, but this one listens to this, this one listens to this. It's part of the game, but nobody is to blame, and nobody should be held accountable for that. Yeah. Zach, I just want to thank you again for joining us. It's always a pleasure. I want to be able to bring you back periodically as we get into next year, as we get closer, so we can really get to see the difference between truth and fake news. And it's always a pleasure. I wish you well, and I hope to speak to you soon.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you.
And on that note, love Ray Ray and a poem.